Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
From a distance, this orchard looks healthy and productive. But up close, you can see that North Carolina's marshmallow crops are in trouble. The problem? Water. Too much of it.
They have a critical range of moisture, and you get above it, they get laden with it, and then you get early drop. You know, these are fruit-bearing trees here, and marshmallows are tree fruit. And when you get this water in them, they drop off down into the ground, and that's it. You can't harvest them.
But how's that really affected them?
It's the third straight year that grower Ben Yokin will not take any marshmallows to market. He knows that growing the cash crop is a gamble, a lost bet that may have cost him his farm.
Marshmallows are a difficult crop. There's really no doubt about that. We planted 275 acres in trees, but it takes 4 years from the time that you get the tree planted before you're going to get your first kind of a harvest out of it at all. So you got to figure 8 or 9 years before you start to make any money back from it at all. And we were hoping to make about $3.5 million if we could run this orchard at full capacity, but the way it looks now, I'm not even going to be able to keep up the loan on the tractor.
The situation has officials in Raleigh worried, and despite the best efforts and research by agricultural experts like Willie Kidd, this year's crop statewide is all but lost.
This is better, but it tastes terrible.
I bet you so. Take a bite out of it.
It's bitter.
Yeah.
But the economic news from the crop's failure is even more bitter.
Ben's not alone. This is going to be a $40 million loss statewide. All the marshmallow producers are in trouble this year. The government might can come through with some low-interest loans or some form of subsidy.
But one thing is certain. Marshmallow growers are proud people, and they won't attempt to market a product that has been tainted by the elements.
Well, the problem mostly is quality. You look at the little ones here, they're stunted by all the rain. They're never going to sell. The large ones, they got mellow mold on them. They're slimy. And they're bitter. They're not going to sell.
I guess most of us haven't thought about North Carolina's troubled marshmallow industry lately. I know that I haven't. To most of us, a marshmallow is nothing more than just a luxury item. But to growers like Ben Yokin, they're much, much more than that. They're a way of life. Bill Coy, Channel 9 Eyewitness News, Iredell County.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Home and Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Bertold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Hey now.
Hey now.
Good morning.
It's spring.
It definitely is.
It is spring.
Beautiful.
Oh, man. Finally. You know how I figured that out?
Because I got mud on my jeans.
Really? I miss that. Should I be inspecting your jeans when you come in? Don't come in here with mud. You kids take that mud back outside. No, because as I was walking out this morning, my daffodils opened up for the very first time today.
Nice.
Today.
Our crocuses are
My crocuses are done.
Oh, mine just started.
My crocuses are done.
My marshmallows have sprouted.
The marshmallow. Did you like that? That was a... It's probably people listening going, oh, those poor people in North Carolina. Oh, how
your
sad.
Intros are awesome. You should just have 1 hour of just all your intros just put together. back to back.
You know, and I have one of my listeners says he looks forward to the intros every week. Yeah. I think he's the only guy. Maybe you, no. Because you're in... Well, the rest of the people are asleep. They don't wake up till halfway through the intro. That's why I play them.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's Sunday at 9 o'clock, and you just... That's what you got. But, you know, the other reason I know it's spring, it's not just that the daffodils are... And my lawn, it's like a week ago, completely brown. Not even a week ago, like 3 days ago, completely brown. It's starting to green up right now.
Beautiful.
Wow. And the other thing that I know that makes me know that it's spring is... Go Blue!
Your team's in it. Michigan man.
Michigan! And, oh my goodness, not only the Final Four, but in the championship game.
Now,
I'm
sure Sanders told you that this is apparently the most popular show on Sundays. Sanders told me that. Mike Novak Show, the first hour of the Mike Novak Show on Sundays is the most popular show on WCPT.
What's wrong with the second hour?
I don't know. I don't know. It's the numbers.
Okay.
But hey, you know, you're talking...
I'll have to talk to him about the numbers later on.
You want to hang on to that. Stop talking about Michigan. This is Chicago.
No. This happens once in a lifetime, okay? Basically, when you're a Michigan fan,
you're right.
You know, as I watch them through this, I didn't think they were going to beat Kansas. I didn't think they were going to beat Syracuse. I did think they were going to beat Florida, but then I always root against Florida teams. You see, here's my in terms of sports, the way I work it is that you never root for teams from Florida, you never root for teams from Texas, and you never root for the New York Yankees. That's like those are the givens. And then the rest of it is sort of in flux. But Michigan, basketball, they're not exactly a basketball powerhouse.
Not since that Fab Five was around.
Not since the Fab Five never won a national title. So that's very interesting.
The dreaded timeout. I remember
the dreaded. You remember that. You were like, 6 months old, but yep. You still remember it.
Yep.
And I'll tell you the truth. I don't expect them to win this game on Monday.
Well, they've got a lot against them, only in the sense of that Louisville's got momentum and they've got a cause.
That where... Got
You're
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I had not seen, and I actually made the mistake of going to YouTube. I watched it on purpose. Now I wish I could scrub it from my Mac.
I know. If you've seen rough. It, you Ugh. Don't want no. to see it again.
People kept talking about it, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to look at this. I can see it. I watched Theismann. No,
if you want to watch a guy's legs snap in half and dangle there, that's what you want to do.
But so that's going to be some tough momentum to beat because those kids have. I mean, all kids.
No, the tough momentum to beat is that they're a really, 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 really good team. Okay, they're seeded number one, and they're coached by one of the greatest coaches in college basketball history, that's what they're up against, and they're an older team. Michigan was the youngest team in the tournament, period. So I've had my run. You know, if they lose on Monday, I'm like, well, I'm still happy. But this is a good year. I mean, at least a good March Madness. Great March Madness, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, who's picking Michigan out of the Big Ten?
Nobody. A lot of people have thrown them brackets away.
Exactly. So, there. Go Blue! All right. And I will play the fight song at least once more today. And I hope Ron Cowgill is listening.
Ohio man.
Yes, Ohio State. Man, which is a big difference. Okay, welcome. We got to get rolling because a lot's going on in the show. Welcome to spring. It's the Mike Novak Show and Chicago's Progressive Talk, the highest rated hour on Sundays on WCPT.
Numbers don't lie, baby.
It's the highest rated 12 minutes on WCPT on the weekends.
I have no idea. Or on Sunday, anyway. It's the highest rated period on Sunday morning between 9 and 11 right now.
In the studio, I'm happy to have Chris Zeman. And is it Zeman? Or that's how you pronounce it? Yeah. Who is, and you never know with these pronunciations here. He's with the Chicago BRT project. He's the project manager. What's BRT, you ask? That's Bus Rapid Transit. It's already started in Chicago. We're going to explain how that works in just a second. Rick DeMaio weather at 9:45. Wally Schmitzky, Dr. Wally, is in the house. He's actually sitting out there in the green room waiting to come in. And it's another great season. Dr. Wally will answer your organic questions about gardening, organic and natural solutions. He's now at Bertold's. That's right. He's at Bertold's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village. More about that later. And if you heard at the top of the show, are now a great sponsor on the Mike Novak Show. And he will answer your gardening questions. And then finally, at the end of all of this, the irrepressible Amy Stewart, who just cranks out one New York Times bestseller after another. And Rob and Lisa, who are in the studio. By the way, Lisa Albrecht, good morning.
Good morning.
And Rob Carthol.
Hi.
Where's Sarah?
She's at the Shamrock Shuffle or maybe the Macy's Garden. What's the
I thought the St. Patrick's Day was over.
Yeah, me too.
It just goes on and on and on.
That race
and
gets pushed back every year, I think.
Oh, dear me.
It's a little chilly to be running March, maybe.
Yeah.
Give me a break. All right. Amy Stewart, who has written The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World's Great Drinks. And have you guys had a chance to look at any of that?
I made a marshmallow liqueur out of my marshmallow plant.
You didn't look at the book. Neither of you. So I'm on my own here. Okay, great. All right, great, cool. Let's start with Chris Zeman. Oh, and by the way, if you got your gardening questions ready for the second hour with Dr. Wally, 773-763-9278. We're also at MikeNovak.net. All the information from today's show. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. There are podcasts of the program. Go to Facebook and like us. Gosh darn it, I don't think we got a single like since last week. It makes me crazy. I'm obsessed. Now I'm just totally obsessed. So I want some likes, but I want 10 new likes by the end of the day. Gosh darn it. 10! And go to Weekend for the Cheap as well.
Hey now.
And let's get a few of those for Denny Sheeter.
You're a good man. Thank you.
Chris Zeman in studio. What, Chris, you are AICP. What does that stand for?
Stands for the American Institute of Certified Planners. So
cool.
Yeah. So I'm an urban planner, and I took an exam. Now I'm a certified planner. I have to keep up with continuing education credits so that I can be the one of the best planners out there.
It's, you know, like master gardeners that are continuing to do education. It's like lawyers now. They have continuing legal education.
Doctors. There's
doctors, everybody. And I think it's a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's excellent. And you're the project manager for Bus Rapid Transit, which started last year in Chicago. It started on the Jeffrey Corridor, November 12th, 2012. All right. For people who have not been following this, what is Bus Rapid Transit? And that's my first softball question for you. I'll try to do some hardball questions later.
Well, Bus Rapid Transit, it was basically invented in Brazil about 40 years ago. It's a way of organizing the street and bus service, essentially to give train-like service, to provide train-like service, but with the flexibility and the lower cost of using buses. So most bus rapid transit systems around the world have very similar characteristics. For example, the main one is a bus-only lane, so buses don't get hung up with traffic. They also have transit signal priority, so they get green lights more often. A lot of them also have prepaid boarding. So just like in a train, you pay to get in the station, and then when the train comes, or in this case, when the bus comes, all the doors open, and people just get on and off at the same time.
So they can get it on the front door or the back door?
Exactly.
Now, how do you know that somebody has paid for this?
There's a couple different ways that to do it. There's two main ways. One is with turnstiles. So, you know, just like in the train, you have to pay.
Oh, so you have to go through to get to the turnstile, then you wait in the area. you can't get in. What?
So you'd be waiting in like kind of a bus station.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're very different from bus stops. They're
organized area where you go through a turnstile, you come in and you wait for the bus, and then when the bus comes, you just board it.
Just like the CTA. Once you're up there on the platform, you just get on the train and you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's one way to do it. The other way is what they call proof of payment, and this Europe's been doing this for decades now.
They're so far ahead of us in everything. What are you going to do?
Yeah. But it's basically where you pay your ticket and then randomly inspectors come around. And if you show your ticket, and if you don't have a ticket, then you get a fine.
They don't paddle people or something?
Yeah. And so what do we do here in Chicago?
They make
We don't do anything here yet.
Jeffrey Corridor doesn't do either of those methods yet.
No, and okay. The Jeffrey Corridor, it's not really considered full BRT. It's more piloting elements of BRT.
So it's more the traffic, the designated bus route lane, the lights, green lights, thing like that. Is that what's been implemented so far?
Well, we don't even have the green lights yet, do we?
No, that's coming this year.
A really good question that Lisa started with there, and that is, mm-hmm. how can we call this BRT when we don't have the dedicated lanes, we don't have the terminals there, we don't have the dedicated traffic lights. I read an article where they called it BRT light at the moment, and I'm sure you guys don't like that at all, but it's kind of what it is.
Well, we're not calling it BRT. That's a very conscious decision.
This one in particular, the system, so you're calling it Jeffrey Jump.
Right. We're calling it the Jeffrey Jump that's testing elements of BRT. And the advantage of that is essentially the first time you put in anything new, it takes a lot longer than you would expect. And so we're testing a lot of the elements so that when we do implement full BRT in a couple future lines, then it'll be a lot easier. We can get some of the kinks worked out and everything. And honestly, the Jeffrey Boulevard, it doesn't have the width and it doesn't have necessarily the need for full BRT.
So why did you start there?
Because it's a very high ridership route, and there was a lot of congestion or bus congestion focused on a 2 mile corridor of that route.
Which corridor was that? Oh, 2 miles. Which
was
that?
It was between 67th and 84th Street.
Right, and that's where you've done the partially dedicated bus lanes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they're dedicated bus lanes during the peak hour. So in rush hour, in the morning rush hour, it's the northbound lane, and in the afternoon rush hour, it's the southbound lane. Mm-hmm. We've provided a lot of, we've upgraded the bus shelters, provided better street furniture and streetscaping as well. And then, the TSP is coming next year. As well as onboard bus trackers. So
TSP.
Oh, sorry, the transit signal priority, where buses get the green light more often.
Ah, okay. You can't use acronyms on this show unless you explain what they are. Okay.
Okay.
No jargon. This is a no jargon.
Jargon free zone.
Right. Jargon free zone. Thank you.
Right, JFC otherwise, but we won't call it an acronym.
Wait. Okay, you get that. And my headsets keep coming apart. I don't know why that is. So you're with the Jeffrey Jump. You're going to slowly bring these things in. But in the meantime, you're already looking at the loop for the Central Corridor. And you're also looking at Ashland and Western.
Right.
And that's all the way from Howard to 95th, is it?
That was the original study area. So with the two lines, and I should say that, the Chicago Department of Transportation and the Chicago Transit Authority, CTA, they've been working really, really hard on all these projects.
Let's stop right there. Under whose auspices is this being? I would assume it's CTA, but you also have the Department of Transportation and you have partners as well. And how does that all work together?
Okay. Well, So essentially, with any BRT, it's the bus service, which CTA runs, but then it's also how you manage the roadway. And in Chicago, that's what CDOT runs, is in control of. So, CDOT and CTA have to partner in these efforts, and they've been, managing, very well the technical analyses, of these. But then also, like you said, we also have the BRT steering committee, and that is, made up.
Is that a pun? Never mind. Oh. Sorry, I just couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
It was intended.
Yeah. The BRT steering committee.
continuez, s'il vous plaît.
Right. We're steering forward, right? no, and that's that was essentially a couple years ago. There were a number of different civic nonprofit groups in Chicago who were interested in implementing bus rapid transit and improving transit generally. And those are the Metropolitan Planning Council, the Active Transportation Alliance, the Civic Consulting Alliance, and then also the Chicago Architecture Foundation. They've been really interested in BRT from an urban design perspective. And then also the Chicago Community Trust has been kind of the overall kind of managing entity, and they've been really providing a lot of expertise and a lot of vision.
I wanted to ask one thing. So, I saw on Mike's website or page, Facebook this week on Mike Novak's show, the whole connection to Chicago architecture. So why, I don't understand why they would be involved. What does that mean?
And this is actually one of the real benefits of having a kind of a diverse steering committee that's been promoting bus rapid transit is that they each come from a different perspective. And from the Chicago Architecture Foundation, they've been doing a lot of work and have a very strong interest in making sure that BRT actually improves the urban. It's not just a transportation project, but that it improves the urban design of Chicago, and that it kind of continues the very strong architectural traditions.
I could see one way that would happen is that you're talking about these dedicated stations. And one of the things you mentioned in the plan is that in many cities where BRT has been implemented, they put them in the median.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, not all streets have medians.
Right.
So you're not going to be able to do it everywhere. How does that make sense, putting that in a median? And I should mention, by the way, we're talking Chris Zeman from Chicago BRT Project. He's the project manager for Chicago BRT. You worked in Brazil.
Yes.
And how different was that from America? And we'll get to the medians in a second. But I'm thinking, was that an easier task or was that a harder task in Brazil?
I worked actually in the city in Curitiba, Brazil, where they invented bus rapid transit. So it had been around a while. So, I wasn't in charge of, setting
the system
up. Oh, okay.
So that's a different story. Yeah.
Yeah. But every context in every city around the world is very different, from road geometry to actual, capacity needs and how many people you need to move to, where they're going and what the city looks like in general. So, so it's very different. Even the vehicles they use are very different.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, I'm kind of curious if anybody's been riding the Jeffrey Jump, how they feel about this and whether they think it's coming together. Apparently, it's a lot faster than the old Express line.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I read, it's actually too fast.
Okay.
No. What I mean is that you're supposed to save 7 minutes, and they're saving like 20 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anecdotally, we've heard a lot of really great things about it. We generally wait for about 6 months or a year to do a full technical analysis of the impact of it. Just because things fluctuate and everything from month to month. But anecdotally, people are very satisfied with it.
That's great. All right. I need to take a short break. If you have ridden on the Jeffrey Jump or you have a question or comment, 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. That's Chris Zeman. He is the Chicago BRT project manager. BRT stands for Bus Rapid Transit. It's coming to Chicago. I want to talk also more about how it affects other traffic out there, because obviously that's part of the deal. Lisa brought up architecture. There's mm-hmm. pedestrians. There's other traffic. I'm mm-hmm. kind of interested in that. And if you want to join in the phone conversation, give us a tweet, pop us a message on Facebook, or call 773-763-9278. Now, did you know that Bertholdt's Garden Center – wait, that was – I can do better than that. There we go. Bertholdt's Garden Center in Elk Grove Village has been serving Chicagoland with a full-service flower shop, nursery, landscaping division, and more for 75 years. Do you love flowers and want a colorful planter that matches your home's decor, but just don't have time to plant one up?
Bertolds has got you covered. Simply bring in your empty containers and let them know, let the folks there know what colors you prefer and the sun exposure that you have, full sun, part sun, part sun or shade. And don't have a container? Well, you can make a selection from their beautiful assortment of pottery or choose one of their cash and carry pre-planted containers. Bertolds expert staff, and that includes Dr. Wally, who's sitting patiently out in the green room. He'll be here in the second hour. And their staff will provide you with the personal service that makes it easy to pick out the plants and pottery that will look great all summer. Bertolt's also offers a great assortment of Chef Jeff veggies and herbs, along with the organic know-how that'll get your gardens to flourish with tasty, healthful, homegrown produce. Bertolt's Garden Center is located at 434 East Devon Avenue in Elk Grove Village, just west of O'Hare Airport. Look for the iconic windmill out front. Or go to BertoldsGardenCenter.com, B-E-R-T-H-O-L-D-S, GardenCenter.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
If your home is your castle, you don't want your yard to be the royal buffet. So, pick up some Bonide Repels All Animal Repellent. Repels All is an all-natural repellent that uses unappetizing smell and taste to keep those nibbling rabbits, squirrels, deer, chipmunks, and raccoons, and more, away from your garden display. Unlike other commercial repellents, Repels All has no unpleasant odor and is effective for up to 2 months guaranteed. Repels All natural formula can be applied to trees, shrubs, perennials, and around edible crops. It also works to prevent animals from chewing on fences and other structures. Repels All is available in ready-to-use liquid formulations and easy-to-spread granules. Look for Repels All products at these fine stores: Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines, Platte Hill Nursery in Bloomingdale and Carpentersville, Abel's Ace Hardware in Homer Glen, or visit Bonide.com, B-O-N-I-D-E.com, to locate a retailer near you. And make sure to download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for use on your iPhone or Droid.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
And then the announcer says, do you like the color green? Well, I do. And if the answer is yes, and you say that too, then you need to head to Alsip Home and Nursery to visit Jonathan Green. We're finally warming up. I mentioned it earlier. Your lawn is waking up, wakey, wakey, which means it's time for Jonathan Green lawn amendments like Magical, their pelletized calcium fertilizer. Love your lawn, love your soil. Yes, that's the name of a product, which stimulates soil microbes and creates a biologically healthy soil. And Black Beauty grass seed, a truly innovative, darker green turf grass planted by sod growers. Black Beauty grass leaves possess an invisible waxy coating similar to what you'd find on an apple. It preserves moisture in the leaf and wards off stress from heat, cold, wind, and disease. Speaking of color, pick up some early season pansy stock and more in their jumbo annual trays. They carry an extensive selection of flats, which they grow themselves. from A to Z, or you could say Alyssum to Zinnia. Allsip Home and Nursery is located in Frankfort, Illinois, on Route 45, just 2 miles south of I-80, and in St. John, Indiana, on Route 41, 4 miles south of Route 30. Yeah, nothing says spring like ELO. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm happy to have in the studio Chris Zeman. He's the project manager for Chicago BRT, and we're discussing the aspects of that. There's a phase of it. The Jeffrey Jump has started along the Jeffrey Corridor. You want to do this downtown. And it makes me wonder if you're going to put a dedicated lane on Madison and Washington streets, which is where you'd have it going back and forth between the transportation centers and basically Millennium Park and Navy Pier and all that. Is it actually going to go all the way to Navy Pier or just have access to routes that get to Navy Pier?
Well, we're having a branded route that goes from it's essentially rebranding the 124 route, which currently goes between Union Station, Ogilvie Center, and Navy Pier. But the infrastructure improvements are going to be on Canal and Clinton and Washington and Madison. And also part of that, there's going to be a Union Station Transit Center. So CDOT is essentially reconstructing a surface parking lot there to make it a kind of a bus station. And that'll feature bus tracker screens within Union Station and then an underground pedestrian tunnel so that people can, you know, in bad weather, people can just wait in the waiting room in Union Station.
So where would the pickup be there at Union Station? Do you have any idea? Would it be on Canal or Clinton?
No. There's across Jackson Street, there's a surface parking lot, and that's where it would be. They'd be reconstructing.
Well, I know where that is. I sometimes use that when I'm downtown, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what about the idea that we're going to take two of the busiest streets in the city and dedicate a bus lane in those? What's that going to do for traffic?
Well,
or two traffic, I guess.
Well, there's already bus lanes there now, although they're not really enforced. And you know, in the rush hour, they don't really act like bus lanes because of delivery trucks and cabs and everything. But there was a central business improvement study done in 2003 that recommended an east-west, a faster east-west transit connection through the loop. And so this is kind of fulfilling that.
There are other parts of the city that could use this too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and you can get north-south to some degree, but try to go east-west if you're not. I mean, even if you're at the Eisenhower is everybody's nemesis, you know. You're not going anywhere half the time on the Eisenhower.
Right.
So why not have a dedicated bus lane? Is it possible that a BRT lane would be on a freeway, or is this meant to be on surface streets?
Well, Pace is using their – putting their buses on the shoulder there.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, as far as CTA in the city of Chicago, it's mostly on urban streets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. But getting back to the dedicated streets on, say, Washington and Madison,
I imagine
you expect some I looked at one of the bits of information that you had on your website, and it said it would increase the typical commute by, like, 1 minute.
Right, exactly.
From 16 to 17 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And that's a good trade-off, if you ask me.
Oh, right, yeah. And it increases the bus speeds about 7.5 minutes, which is about a 20% increase, you know, between Union Station and Michigan Avenue. CDOT was obviously concerned about traffic, too, on Washington Madison. And we went out there and counted. And of all the people on Washington Madison, over half of them were pedestrians. About 56%. But then of the people that were in vehicles, almost half of them, 47%, were actually in buses. Even though buses only made up 4% of the number of vehicles on the street. So buses are carrying a lot of people already. And mm-hmm. so making better enforceable and more dedicated bus lanes on Washington Madison essentially moves more people through it and just creates better efficiency.
It makes total sense to me. I mean, I know that, that we've had all those experiments in town. We shut down State Street mm-hmm. for years to put buses that turned out to be really horrible for businesses. Mm-hmm. And so that was reversed.
Right.
But I understand the urge to do this, to clear it out and let's move people faster now. But it sounds like in this way you're doing a balancing act.
Exactly. Yeah. We're creating a lot more balance. I mean, one of the options we looked at was to take one of the streets and make it essentially a bus-only street. And, you know, politically and technically, nobody really wanted to do that. So,
right.
and you know, nobody wants to recreate.
Nobody wants to be Jane Byrne again? Come on, give me a break.
Yeah. So this is essentially, you know, connecting Union Station and Ogilvie Center to a lot more of downtown, a lot more reliably, a lot more efficiently. So, you know, people that come in on Metra, people that come in on Amtrak, they can get to their job faster.
It makes total sense because those mm-hmm. are the routes that people are generally going to grab because right. they go to the transportation mm-hmm. centers. Let's take a quick phone call. 773-763-9278 is our phone number. Steven in Chicago, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Yes, good morning. It's a little off topic. Downtown is to see improvements downtown is fantastic, but I'd like to bring a little attention to the southwest side of Chicago, the communities of Archer Heights near Archer and Pulaski, Garfield Bridge, Archer and Harlem. There is a corridor there, and there's a lot of people that come into the city through the southwest side. The challenge we're having is that, for example, no bicycle path. And it's a great, you know, right on down Lakeshore Drive, we can see how many people come in and out of the city on a bicycle path, whether they're running, jogging, walking, or biking. We need something like that to tie the southwest side of Chicago, which extends all the way to Harlem, to the rest of Chicago. And I know this conversation is specifically about buses. We could use a bus route, say, along, you know, through Berwyn, through Cicero, through that corridor there, again, down Ogden Avenue, more reliable and consistent transportation down Ogden Avenue. There's a lot of people that come through the southwest side, and we try all kinds of different things. Once we get downtown, there's many options, but it's getting downtown, whether recreationally or commuting-wise, that's really necessary.
So the question is, do you have any plans for the southwest side?
Specifically, Archer Heights, roughly to and from Midway Airport, without having to use a car. A bicycle path would be ideal.
Okay, good question, Stephen, because we do need to take care of all the parts of our city. So let's see what Chris has to say, and thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Chris?
Yeah, thanks for the call. And, you know, I mean, I definitely agree that, you know, people should be able to get around safely no matter how they want to get around the city. In the next couple of months, CDOT is kicking off a system network plan for BRT. So we're going to be examining, it's going to be a very data-intensive analysis of all the bus routes, all the bus stops, all the train stops, transfers, and everything in the city, essentially to decide where the next, 8, 10, 12 BRT routes in the city should go. Essentially what makes a good BRT route is where you have very high ridership and very slow bus speeds. That's where you get the biggest benefit. So thank you. Thank you for that suggestion, and I'll mark that down.
All right. Before I let you go, folks should know that they can go to your website to see what is going on there, and that's brtchicago.com. All that information is over there. But you mentioned a competition.
that's going on.
Yeah, we're very excited about this. The Ingrid Haftel from the Chicago Architecture Foundation has been working tirelessly with the Chicago Architecture Club, with Carla Sierra Alta and Brian Strawn, and with CDOT and CTA to put together the an international bus rapid transit station design competition. The idea of that is that the bus station that the bus stations that are going to be out there, they're not just going to be standard bus shelters, but they're going to be fixed amenities, and they're the passengers' first and last interface with bus rapid transit. So they need to connote ideas of higher quality, that the system is modern, it's easy to use, it's reliable, it's comfortable. So the competition is calling for architects to design three bus stations, one for the Central Loop on Madison between State and Dearborn, and then two for the Ashland and Western corridors. So one in Pilsen at 18th and Ashland, and one in Bucktown at Western and Cortland. The announcement was made about a week and a half ago. Entries are due May 13th, and this is a worldwide competition. Winners will be announced June 6th. The jury is we're putting together an all-star panel of jurists, from professionals, academics, and public officials to rate these. So please go to brtchicago.com, and it'll be right on the homepage. There's a link there for more information. But, yeah, we're very excited about it. We're expecting to get a lot of good submissions from around the world.
Can I submit a design?
You can submit a design.
Anybody can do it?
Anybody.
Oh, do you have to live in Chicago?
No. This is a worldwide competition.
Whoa, well.
So I think everybody except me.
Which means that somebody from Germany will win. Yeah. That's maybe from Brazil. Who knows? Yeah. Listen, Chris, thank you so much. Chris Zeman, a project manager for Chicago BRT. I appreciate you stopping by the studio today. Good luck, because I'm fully on board with this. I think this is a good way. One of the things we didn't, and there's so much that weren't able to address, but the idea, and you mentioned it briefly, was that it has the benefits of rail, but being a lot cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And quicker.
And I think that's a good thing. And if we could set these up all over the city, I think we're going to be in a lot better shape. So thanks a lot. And I hope we talk again soon.
All right, thank you very much.
For 25 years, the familiar red trucks of Christie Weber Landscapes have been a sign that your landscaping needs are going to be met with quality work and responsive service. Christie must be doing something right when many of the residential clients she started with more than two decades ago still trust her to take care of their yards. Christie Weber Landscapes also maintains some of the city's premier landmarks, including Soldier Field, the Museum Campus, Grant Park, Millennium Park, and United Center. She's also a really big hockey fan. You should know that. So I'm glad. That's why she wants that job, I think. But if she's passionate about landscaping, she's also passionate about Chicago, which is why Christie built her LEED Platinum certified building on Chicago's west side. And as you've heard on my show before, Christie Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center at 2200 West Grand Avenue caters to urban gardeners of all kinds, and they do free workshops most Thursdays at 7 p.m. Rob went to one of those the other day, and you really loved their seed selection, didn't you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. They've got a ton of cover crops available, and now's the time to get over there and get some cover crop seeds for your garden.
That's so cool. What kind of cover crops did they have?
I picked up buckwheat, and they also have pea and oat blend.
Mm-hmm.
They had a lot of seeds there. I am a seed addict, and they had a lot of seeds there that I have not seen elsewhere. They've got botanical interests, and I'm pretty sure seeds of change seeds there.
Wow. Who's selling
great.
That? I mean, come on. Who's selling that? So head on over to Christie Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and receive updates on specials. Christie Weber Landscapes, right in your own backyard. Go to ChristieWeber.com.
Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
Looking to give some motherly love to your flowers, trees, shrubs, or vegetables? Look to Dr. Earth's probiotic Motherland Planting Mix. The blend is chock full of organic ingredients like forest humus and aloe vera and yucca extracts. Motherland Planting Mix is a perfect protective cover for seeds, will improve soil drainage in clay soils, and when used as a mulch, it will control weeds. Doctor your earth with Dr. Earth. 35 million satisfied customers, can't be wrong. Visit DrEarth.com to find a dealer near you.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Rick DeMaio, weather in 60 seconds. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. A client from Chicago asked whether tree roots only go out as far as the branches on trees. And the biggest root is the one that goes straight down into the ground, right? Can I see a show of hands?
Is wrong.
I don't have a buzzer. Oh, well. I don't want to do a ding because we don't want to reward incorrect information. Mr. Carthol has it correct. It's a common misconception that tree roots only extend out as far as the branches on a tree, and it's commonly referred to as the drip line. In fact, they reach out much farther than that, and they're found in the top 12 inches of the soil, not one long root that goes deep into the earth. Keep this in mind when you are considering construction around your home or office, such as building a deck or extension. It might seem as if the construction is far enough from the tree to prevent it from being damaged, but you don't know, which is why you should invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look to get their opinion. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And with that introduction, we bring in Ricky D. The big
whistle. Is this where I say, win one for the Gipper?
and then we hear a thump, and then you drop on the floor. Right. And
oh, my God. I actually associated myself with Ronald Reagan. How did I do that?
I don't know. I'm going to save that tape.
Please don't burn it. Oh.
Hey!
Oh, Mike, spring has sprung, huh?
Oh, my goodness! Where did this come from?
Yeah, well, you know what? When you get the right mix of radiation and the right temperature pattern, you get some nice weather. And it's amazing. And I always say, Mike, and I think you and your listeners can agree with this wholeheartedly, is there's something about the day after a warm spring day where it rains. You walk outside, and everything just has a different smell to it. Wouldn't you agree to that?
Absolutely. I have to admit, yesterday, even though it was blustery and warm,
it was kind of an annoying warm.
Yeah, it was, and kind of annoying blustery.
Yeah,
especially in my neighborhood, because then all the paper wrappers fly up against my shrubs
and
my front yard.
Secondhand smoke from a block away at you too.
Yeah, I guess. But you're right. Today, I walk out the back door.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's quiet.
Right.
And still, and you can see where it's rained. And
right.
Suddenly, the grass is greening up. It's almost as somebody flipped a switch last night.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it just has a different look to it. Has a different feel to it. Has a different smell to it. And it all happened to be on a Sunday morning. And, of course, there weren't many people around at that time in the morning when you get up. But that's the beauty of getting up early on a Sunday morning. I always say when you're able to enjoy this by yourself, it just gives you a different sense of fulfillment that you're not going to get on a Monday morning rushing to catch a cab or bus or a train or getting into your car and, you know, being around a lot of people with traffic. So hopefully your listeners can enjoy this day, because even though it's a little bit cooler than yesterday, this is probably the first really nice, quote, spring day we've had so far this spring. And enjoy today, because there's not much sun in the forecast, believe it or not, for the next 5 or 6 days. I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but otherwise the pattern gets very cloudy and, believe it or not, very wet, which is good.
No. Normally I'd say yes. We're shooting Dig in Chicago this week.
Oh, brother.
Wednesday and Thursday and some on Friday, perhaps. And
yeah, you know what? The second half of the weekend looks a little bit drier than the first half. But beginning tomorrow into Tuesday and Wednesday, a very slow-moving wet pattern where in a period of 72 hours, it may rain 24 hours, but we really don't know when exactly where it's going to rain or how much. So this is kind of typical spring stuff. And even though that's kind of a bit of a roller coaster forecast for precipitation, we've had a roller coaster, you know, week as far as temperature. And part of it is due to the fact that the lake is about 12 to 13 degrees cooler than what it was last year at this time. You'll hear oftentimes, you know, people on the radio say lake water temperature 40 degrees, but that's a thermometer being dropped into about 3 feet of water off the pier at Navy Pier. That is not the real important temperature. The important temperature is the mid-lake temperature that's still showing only 34 degrees. And when that wind blows down the length of the lake, like it did on Tuesday and like it did on Thursday, it was cold around here. We had highs both days only in the upper 30s, but yet we had readings in the upper 40s on Monday, close to 50, I think it was 59 degrees on Wednesday. And then we got into some, you know, somewhat milder weather on Friday, then shot all the way up to 70 degrees yesterday, which is pretty amazing when you think about the last time we had a 70, it was December 2nd. So we had a 70 in December, a 60 in January, nothing like that in February, no 60s in March, and all of a sudden we have a 70. And like you said, things are beginning to green up a little bit.
It's great, you know, and, you know, I had something in my head that I was going to ask and it suddenly just went, burp, you
know. I'm low on cash right now. Sorry.
Did it have anything to do with Dig in Chicago?
Oh, no. Well, the fact that we're going to get rained on, maybe, you know,
Well, you know what? We are going to get some, you know, some rain. We'll talk more about that in detail a little bit. But last night I was at the Tom Skilling WGM 33rd, believe it or not, 33rd annual Fermi Lab Tornado and Severe Weather Seminar. And hats off to Tom Skilling for putting together what I think was probably one of the best lineup of severe weather and weather experts I've ever seen for a public forum. You had Dr. Louis Uccellini, who has just been recently named the director of the National Weather Service. He was previously the director of what they call the operational and modeling section. Now he's actually the director of five different centers. And one of the reasons why he was able to get him is because Louis is a graduate of University of Wisconsin, where Tom went as well as I went. So they have an affection for one another from a standpoint of, you know, collegiate times and things like that. He also had Dr. Russ Schneider, who's the director of the Storm Prediction Center down in Norman, Oklahoma. And Russ was actually my TA when I was a senior, and we were talking after his presentation. He goes, "Did we go to a Cubs game that summer in '85? And it was 65 when we left Madison. We got to the lakefront. It was absolutely freezing here. You know, we were talking about the lake breeze. So here's the person who actually is the overseer of all the severe weather watches and tornado watches that goes out across the United States. In addition to that, you had Dr. Don Wubels, who is from the University of Illinois down in Champaign. And Don was actually on the last two international panel on climate assessment and was granted the Nobel Peace Prize, or I should say the Nobel Prize for Science, amongst other people as well. And he was there talking last night about climate change and its effect on severe weather from a standpoint of unusual weather, not so much from a standpoint of thunderstorms. And I sent you a link, Mike, because I didn't know that this was actually available, but the next national assessment on climate is up for public review, and I sent you a link, and you can put that link on your homepage, and it's available for the public to review, and believe it or not, Mike, actually respond and ask questions, and they will get back to you on some of the stuff.
Oh, come on. No, they won't.
No. if you ask the right question, you mention Mike Novak and Rick DeMille, they'll get back to you.
Yeah, sure they will.
But really, this is an amazing thing because, you know, this is not something that you normally get when you have these assessment reports issued. And one thing that he mentioned, I think this was to kind of quell controversy, is that they're not putting anything in there on what we need to do. I think recent reports have been all about advocacy, and they're trying to stay away from that because obviously, you know, it ticks certain people off. And he mentioned that none of the people working on this report are getting paid for it. Oftentimes you'll hear, oh, well, how much did you get paid to do this? Nothing. They don't get paid for it. They do it out of the challenge, the interest in science. And this report will be part of the fifth assessment program that's coming up here in another 6 months. So interesting read, and he had a lot of great questions coming out of it. And then we had, obviously, the couple of people from the National Weather Service here, as well as a storm spotting seminar. And it was just, it was amazing for me to sit there as someone who was first part of this back in 1986 and see where this program has morphed. And you still have this amazing interest from people on understanding science on a very basic, you know, public level. And a lot of this stuff is obviously way above the head of a lot of the people, but it shows you that the interest for, you know, climate change and obviously weather and severe weather is still on the forefront of a lot of people's minds.
And I've given that information to Lisa. She's going to post that on Facebook here, so we'll have that up there. I remember what I was going to say to you is that, sure, I took my soil thermometer out to the backyard last week. It was really revealing. Out back, which is I have a northern exposure for the back.
Yeah,
back,
yeah, we talked about the different parts of your backyard being cold or warm. I remember.
Right. By the garage, which was the farthest part away from the house and gets sun, it was plus 60, okay? In the middle part, it was 56. Right next to the house, it was 36 degrees in the
Holy
soil.
Oh, now how far down did you go with the thermometer?
It tells you to go 2 to 3 inches. So
normal soil moisture from a standpoint of temperature is about 4 inches. And I was looking this morning, and below 4 inches, it was about 47 degrees at the National Weather Service, or at 4 inches, and below four inches with sod, it was about 43 inches. Now, I got a feeling those temperatures from yesterday, even though we hit 70 yesterday, that was a quick shot of warm weather. It wasn't like it lasted a long time. But the one thing that's really going to be in to warm things up is warm overnight lows and a lot of rain. I think that's probably what we're going to get more so into. The pattern has definitely shifted from a late winter one now to a spring one. So,
well, then let's get our quick forecast. You got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. I figured we were kind of morphing into that. But temperatures today, pretty much where they're going to be for the rest of the day, mid to upper 40s in the lake, probably mid 50s inland. Rain arrives tomorrow, a little bit of rain on Tuesday, a little bit of rain on Wednesday. And overall, Mike, probably over the next 7 days, readings probably near average. A little bit 5 to 10 degrees above average, a little bit of 5 to 10 degrees below average. Typical spring stuff for the middle of April.
Sounds great, Rick. Thanks a lot. We will talk next week.
Take care, Mike.
All right. Coming up in the second hour, Dr. Wally is in the house with your gardening questions. Give us a jingle, and he will do his best to come up with an answer for you.
I told you I can't make it slip. Jim, can you record the talk back? Record that, Jim.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Home and Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split-stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. And by Birchold's Floral Gift and Garden Center. Get green, let's get growing. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Never think to worry, never even feel a fright. Single sleeps alone, and I know you don't really mind. 5 years by your side,
the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show, and it's a pleasure to bring in Dr. Wally. Dr. Wally is in the house. Again, 773-763-9278. Wally, how are you?
Very good, Mike. Thank you.
Have we had you in the studio before? I can't remember.
I've never been had the pleasure of being in the studio, but I've had a couple conversations with you.
I know. You're always on the show, but I didn't know that. I couldn't remember if you'd been in the studio. Well, you So the first time you're in the studio, and you've also changed locations. Tell us about that. You're at Bertolt's now, which, as I mentioned before, is a new sponsor on the Mike Novak Show. Tell me about Bertolt's.
Bertolt's is a very nice family-oriented garden center. We're out in Elk Grove. We're just a couple of...
Now, you're Elk Grove or Elk Grove Village?
Elk Grove Village.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And because there's two, aren't there?
Okay. Well, it's Elk Grove Village.
Yeah.
Okay. We're off of Devon, 434 East Devon, just by Devon and Tony.
Is that how you pronounce it, Tony? I wasn't sure. Tony? Yeah,
Tony.
Because so it's between Tony and Arlington Heights Road.
Correct.
And, you
correct.
Know, and if you're shooting... so it's like the back side of O'Hare. Basically,
correct.
you find Devon and then you shoot west, just the back side of O'Hare.
That's correct. You can't miss us. Like you mentioned before, our property is marked off by our beautiful, iconic antique windmill that's out in the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, I know where you are.
See, everybody knows the windmill.
A couple of real nice markers there. I've got a type of platform up by the front there, and we have a beautiful water tower, which we are going to be growing up vegetables all the way up the tower this summer, so make sure you stop by and see that. It's a great little garden center. We like to have plenty of family-oriented programs going on. We'll be having some different seminars and topics, trying to extend ourselves to educate our area a little bit more in the techniques of growing organically and gardening organically also. So
that's kind of your specialty, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that I really take a lot of pride in. And like I say, as far as being helpful for the environment and producing real healthful, good tasting vegetables for the family, you can't get any better than that.
So what do you think of this cool spring? How's that affecting, gardens? Mostly, how's it affecting growing this year?
Well,
and the things you're doing?
I think what's good about it is we finally moved out of a drought a couple of weeks ago officially in the Chicago and Illinois area here. So the soil levels are, the moisture levels are up quite a bit compared to last year. Last year was really kind of an exception. You know, we had such a warm March. And when we started into our gardening season, a lot of people took the idea that, well, the whole season's going to be like this. They got going a little bit too early. And then as the season progressed a little further, you found out we had some dips in temperature, and then finally the drought situation that was going on. It was tough, a little tough gardening last year.
Yeah, well, it's been and it's kind of the opposite here, where we have we were 3 weeks early last year, and we're 3 weeks late this year, maybe even later. I mean, come on, we haven't even seen my Cornus mass hasn't popped, and that's usually one of the very first things, and it's April 7th.
That's correct. One of the points that I was going to bring up, too, as far as a pointer goes, and I know you mentioned talking about thermometers and that type of thing, is I actually brought you a little gift here. It's a little soil thermometer.
Oh,
and as far as one of my tips is that you really can't beat these thermometers for when you're supposed to go out and start working in your garden.
Okay.
Outside temperatures are one thing.
Let me see that baby here.
Sure.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, this is neat. This is the little spike here with the...
It looks like my meat thermometer.
Yeah. Maybe, can you use it for meat too, Wally?
It might be a little cool temperature there.
Yeah.
But what's kind of cool about that is the face of the thermometer is actually marked off when you have recommended planting temperatures of as far as the soil goes.
Oh, you're
for
right.
Various
it does.
Vegetables.
It says 60 degrees, tomato, corn, 50. Where's my glasses?
It's 50 for broccoli.
Yeah, 50 for broccoli,
weathers.
65 for cantaloupe and pumpkin, 46 for cabbage, celery, onion, peas. Oh, this is cool. It's right on the, who makes this?
It's by Rapid Test.
Okay. Well, thank you. Now, how deep do you put this?
You'll put it down there about a good 5 inches.
So
you
really, so
soil.
I didn't put mine in deep enough. The one I had at home said 3 inches. So
yeah, 3 to 5 inches. And, my soil in my vegetable garden at home, which is a raised bed, is a little tad warmer because of it, because I have it built with stone. But the soil temperatures this morning were all the way up to about 44, almost 45.
Now, are you when you say 44, 45, where did you take your temperature?
In the center of the garden. And
is it, how much sun does that have?
It's full sun.
Really?
It's
so
full sun.
You were only getting filled. Then obviously I need to go deeper because even though the I took it by the garage and it gets full sun in my backyard, pretty much full sun. It just seemed very warm there. So I'll put this one in and we'll see down to a slightly deeper depth than I did the other one, and we'll see what the temperatures are like down there.
But at the soil temperature now, you can feel real good about getting out there and getting your lettuce sowed and your sugar snap peas or regular peas, snow peas, that type of thing. Onions, carrots, you know, your root crops, you can start getting them out there. You know, lettuce will like to germinate when it's a little cooler out anyway.
Yeah, spinach. So these are crops for those who want to plant vegetables. These are the ones that you can direct sell right now.
Correct.
Right? So
correct.
Let's go through that again. So you got lettuce, peas. What else did you say?
Well, sugar snap peas as well. Yeah. Your spinach, of course.
Right.
Collards, Swiss chard.
Broccoli.
Broccoli is just about there. I would feel fairly comfortable about doing it now.
Uh-huh.
Broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's time to get growing.
You're right, and of course those are the direct sow. And you know, if you had done this last year, you'd have been behind the curve. You know, because we had 80s in March last year, and there were 70s this time of year last year, and then it got cool. It was really odd, kind of.
Yeah, correct. The cool weather vegetables that you're so used to were already almost going towards seed. What happens is a lot of times your lettuce and that type of thing will go and it'll what they consider bolting, which it goes to seed, and then you're stuck. You're going to have to wait till it cools down a little bit to reseed it. And it turns more into a fall type of thing then.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this season I'm looking forward to kind of normal growing conditions, hopefully.
Well, normal but slightly delayed.
Slightly delayed,
you know,
correct.
What about lawns? As I was talking earlier on the show, mine is still in the backyard. It's just pretty brown. Just today I'm starting to see a little bit of green.
You're going to see some green today. You know, we didn't have a good amount of rain in the last till last night, of course, and in my neighborhood we had a good amount of lightning too, and
that actually puts nitrogen in your soil,
brings it right down into the soil. So you're going to see some green up coming up in the next few days, and everything's a good thing as far as your lawn being brown and that type of thing. It'll come out of that. Just be patient. A lot of folks' lawns are damaged from drought and insect infestations from last year, so probably that's something that you want to do a little bit of a mild rake up after the soil dries down a little bit and get some of that thatch out of your lawn. And
if you got thatch,
right.
Mean mine is kind of bare. I have to admit that I did a little rake up a few days ago.
Well,
I don't have thatch because I don't really fertilize. my feeling is, it's lawn. You know, what do I care?
Well, correct, and
it usually does pretty well too. You know, because every now and then I'll put some compost in there, and I actually have been known to overseed occasionally. And getting back to what folks should be doing at this time of year. Now, spring is not the optimum time to rebuild your lawn. It's really in the fall.
Correct.
But that being said, this is when you get bombarded by the advertising for lawn care. You know, and I don't get the lawn care people. You know, they know that fall is the best time, but they put all their money into spring. And maybe it's because they know that if the lawn fails, people will be trying it again in the fall. And, you know, and that's kind of cynical. But I just don't I don't get that. I have said for years that I think businesses, horticultural businesses, even garden centers need to be paying more attention to the fall.
It's a missed opportunity, if you ask me, because that's really when you can get your garden in shape.
Well, that's correct, Mike. And the University of Illinois Extension Service, we'll give you a couple of pointers on that. One of them is the best time to reseed your lawn is actually is early fall. What will happen is you have a cooler outside temperatures as far as air temperatures, and your soil temperature is still warm from the summer. So, therefore, you're going to still get decent germination rates. And, of course, you're going to take advantage of the little extra moisture and that type of thing that the fall offers. You'll get a little bit better germination than always in the fall.
That being said, like I said, people, and by the way, 773-763-9278, if you got a gardening question, you're going to get out there. Dr. Wally's in the house, and if you got anything showing up on Twitter there, Rob, you're my eyes and ears, because I'm busy. I'm otherwise engaged here.
Well, we do have one question. What should we be doing now to prepare our soil? And that was from Celeste 1013, and I asked whether that is referring to just general lawn soil or particularly to veggie beds. I'm not sure what she's referring to.
Well, we can talk both. Okay, if you're preparing your soil, let's say it's a veggie bed. Okay, at the moment.
Okay, the one thing that you want to remember too when you're outside working in your vegetable garden is that you want to work that soil when it's dry. Now my soil is fairly saturated, so when I'm going to get ready to prepare my garden for planting beds and my broccoli and cauliflower later on in the week, I'm going to make sure that it's dried out. You can do an awful lot of soil compaction if you work out in a garden when the soil is wet. You know, we strive so much for a good tilth of the soil, for a nice, airy, loose soil, because we're all fighting kind of a clay soil condition here, which compacts easily. If you're out there working it when it's wet, you're going to actually close a lot of those important soil pores up and push your soil back out of the condition that you really want to have it for optimum planting. So rule of thumb is don't work that soil when it's wet. Let it dry down a little bit. I always like to do a little bit of soil amendments in the fall. I'll add some compost for sure. In the springtime, I'm going to do a little bit more of the amendments, a little more extra compost, and probably a little bit of an application of a good organic balanced fertilizer. I'm a huge fan of Dr. Earth. I like to mix that up into the soil a few weeks prior to planting. Another one that I like to use, especially when I'm preparing seed beds, is liquid seaweed. I'll go out there and I'll water thoroughly the garden a few days before I'm going to plant my seeds. Let that seaweed sink in. Let it do its magic with waking up the positive bacterias and the positive microbial life in that soil. Get it energized. When you plant your seeds, you're going to find out that they pop open and germinate a lot easier that way.
Really?
Yes.
With the
with liquid seaweed. And there's a little bit of iodine that's in the seaweed that mm-hmm. aids the soil germination.
Do you
also
have a specific seaweed product you like?
And, of course, as always, Dr. Earth Seaweed. It's
you
very,
know what?
Very good
and
pure strain.
Their commercial is coming up, and we didn't coordinate this, folks, but it just so happens that we're going to be talking about Dr. Earth Seaweed later in the show. We got a phone call there, Mr. Denny?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's go to line one, if I knew how to do this. Okay, and Lucille, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning.
And you have a question for Dr. Wally.
Yes, Dr. Wally. This is Lucille from Elk Grove Village. Question about growing tomatoes in planters. I tried it last year with some success, but because of the drought, I wasn't sure about watering. So what tips have you got about watering tomatoes that are growing in planters?
All right. And before you answer that, first thing I'm going to say is, you do know, Lucille, it's too early to put out tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Just want to make sure. Usually it's like
I'm not ready to plant them yet.
You got 2 months, so just calm
right.
down. And then, but that being said, Wally, what's the tip on keeping tomatoes watered in planters?
Okay, Lucille, thanks for calling. One thing that you have to be a little careful with is what type of soil mix you're going to put in your containers. A gentleman stopped in the store the other day, and he was discussing the fact that he had tomatoes last year that were giving him a hard time splitting, and that because of the drought and the warm conditions, when every time he'd come home, the plants would be drooping, he'd start watering, and eventually when the fruit started coming, it would crack. Well, to get into the conversation a little bit further with the gentleman, I found out that he had mixed topsoil in with some composted leaf materials, and that's what he was using for his growing medium. Topsoil should never be put in planters or pots. Topsoil is something that you're going to fill a little low area in your garden with, or add a little soil level to your planting beds, but don't mix it in pots. You want to start with a very, very good balanced potting soil, and make sure that when you plant that you add a little bit of fertilizer in with the planting. And again, I'm a big fan of Dr. Earth because of the mycorrhizae that's in the fertilizer. I enjoy using his potting soil as well. That's one of my combinations for healthy tomatoes in a container. Dr. Earth Pot of Gold potting soil and a little handful of the tomato fertilizer when you first plant them. Make sure it's well incorporated into the planting mix. And get your tomatoes in their root systems down in that planting mix so they can take up mycorrhizae. Mycorrhizae is going to really help you get those roots going and established.
And one of the things about Dr. Earth and some other of the natural products is that you can put the roots right on that, and it's not going to burn them. It's not a fertilizer that's going to burn root tomato roots.
Yes. And the other thing that tomatoes in containers develop a lot of is blossom end rot, where the bottom of the tomato kind of gets a black flat spot that's kind of rotten.
That's a problem.
It ruins the appearance of the tomatoes. Well, oftentimes that's uptake of calcium into the plant in the containers. Our calcium in our soil in Illinois is a fairly good rate in our area, so that's not always a problem. What happens in containers is uptake of the calcium. So when you select your product that you're going to use as a basic fertilizer, again, have something that has a good percentage of calcium in it. And I believe your Dr. Earth has got almost 8% in there. That's going to help you with your blossom end rot problems. And also watch your watering. You know, you don't have to overdo it in a container. You know, the old rule of thumb is put your finger down into the soil a few inches, feel it. If it feels dry or the tomato's starting to wilt a little bit, give it some water. Always water in the morning, too.
And the other thing, though, in regard to that is that in terms of the size of the container with tomatoes, you got to have a decent-sized container.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, if you don't have a decent sized container, you're going to be and so, you know, I would say, okay, like you've got a 16 inch container, you're not putting more than one tomato plant in there, mm-hmm. and would you do any smaller than that, Wally?
I'd stick with at least a 5 gallon container for tomatoes. Yeah. Your tomato root system is fairly large. Tomatoes are heavy feeders. You want to make sure you have enough so those roots can develop and go deep down into the container. You know, bypassing that and using a smaller container really doesn't help you because tomato ends up getting root bound, and then your water bypasses the root system and it goes right out through the bottom of the container. Make sure you have enough soil mass in that container for it to work right. You can always, you know, like Mike says, stick with one tomato per pot. If you mm-hmm. want to add a few of your, you know, herbs along with your tomato, well, that's fine. You know, that's not going to take mm-hmm. up too much out of the pot. You can put a little cilantro or a little bit of basil in there with it. So
make a salad out of it.
There you go.
Correct.
Or plant, you know, the pizza plant, you know. The pizza garden, as they say. What's the pizza garden? It's like basil, tomato, and
oregano.
Oregano. Yeah, I guess that's it. All right. Well,
thank you,
Lucille, for calling. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lucille.
773-763-9278 is our telephone number. I need to take a short break here. Wally, we'll take your questions. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We've got Dr. Wally. And by the way, I should mention, Dr. Wally is not a real doctor. He just likes having the MD tags on his radio flyer wagon. And that's
But, you know, it's funny because at the old place, can we mention the old place?
Sure.
Wally used to be at Pesci's, and now he's at Bertolt's. But people would come in and they would want to talk to Dr. Wally. Well, now he's going to be hanging out at Bertolt's, and that's why I want you to head over there to Bertolt's to talk to Dr. Wally about your gardening problems. And, of course, Bertolt's, again, is located at
434 East Devon in Elk Grove Village.
Okay. Spring is in the air. Birds are chirping, worms are wiggling, and gardeners are out hoeing soil. Lake Street Supply, great to have them back after a couple of years' absence. Lake Street Supply has the products you need to build the garden of your dreams this season, like their newest compost, cow shiitake. Yeah, Denny's looking at me. Came real close, huh?
Oh, yeah, hit that dump button for a second.
Nope, that's the name of it. Just like the mushroom. Or I looked up the pronunciation, and they had the pronunciation. The voice says it for it. You, it's shiitake. So either way, it sounds like I sound like Stephanie Miller, don't I? The show has suddenly become Stephanie Miller, hasn't it?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. All the virtues of mushroom compost without the worry over pesticides and salts. Cow shiitake, a Lake Street exclusive. It's true, and he's very excited about it. I talked to Mark Moxley at Lake Street Supply. Nobody else has got this stuff. He's got it, and he's got it. He tested it within an inch of his life, and he's very proud of this. And he says, this is the primo product. So, and I love Lake Street Supply, and they've got just great stuff. They specialize in healthy soil, compost, and organic fertilizer. They're also Chicago's leader in sustainable landscape materials like rainwater cisterns, green roof supplies, reclaimed hard goods, and permeable pavers. For the best selection in pavers and retaining walls, choose Unilock products. Lake Street is an authorized Unilock dealer. Whatever your challenge, Lake Street Supply is there to help you tackle it. They'll even help you find a designer or contractor if you need one. Now, for the month of April, get this. Okay, folks, stand by. Retail customers get a 10% discount when they mention, yes, Mike Novak. All right? 10% off when you mention my name. So head into Lake Street Supply for hours and directions. Visit lakestreetsupply.com. While you're online, like them on Facebook. Lake Street Supply, a thoughtful approach to landscape supply between Damon and Wood on Lake Street in Chicago. And that's one of the things I like about them. They're in the city of Chicago.
Bonnie knows when you plant something, it keeps on giving. Growing from friend to neighbor to community. Generations of gardeners have trusted Bonnie for fresh, healthy vegetable and herb plants. Rely on Bonnie for quality plants, help, and support. Bonnie, gardening with you since 1918. BonniePlants.com.
At long last, we're getting a little bit of honest-to-goodness spring weather around here, and we're all finally waking up, including bees. And if you have a copy of the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you're going to learn more about the local varieties of bees than you can shake a stamen at. For instance, do you know how many species of native bees there are in Illinois alone? Anybody in the room got a guess here? The number of native bee species in Illinois? Come on.
Three.
Good guess. Lisa?
I was going to say 13.
You can turn on your mic when you do that, too.
I thought I saw you hit. I was going to say more like 13 or 14, but he's more knowledgeable than me about this.
Denny?
Six.
There are more than 300 species of native bees in the Prairie State.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Color me embarrassed.
Heck. And if you get stung by one of them, boy, you'll be really embarrassed. There are 50 to 70 species of native bees in just the Chicago area.
Really?
Yep. Here's another thing. Another reason to pick up the magazine. And you're going to learn, by the way, that story about the bees is in there. So you want to know about that. Pick up Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. And here's another story. It's been mighty cool around here lately, and that calls for cool spring plants. Wally knows about this, like ranunculus, pansy, stock, dianthus.
There's a story about the best picks for your spring containers. Then there's my column on the inside back page. Talk about cool. I'm so cool that I'm like a pansy. Wait, that didn't come out exactly right. Okay.
Well done.
Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Ah, you can smell it, can't you? No, I'm not talking about the leftover shellfish that you should have tossed out yesterday. No, I'm talking about the smell of new mowed lawn. Even I like that smell. And if you want a great-looking lawn to go with a great-smelling lawn, you need Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed. I know, Wally, you guys carry some Bonide products over at Bertolt's.
Yes, we do.
I'm sorry, I should turn that on for you. Have you got DuraTurf there, I hope?
We have the Bonide series of grass seed, yes.
Okay, cool. Bonide uses the best varieties of grass seed available for their DuraTurf grass seed mixes, and whether it's Bonide's full sun, sun and shade, or dense shade grass seed mixes, you will have a lawn that is self-repairing, disease and insect resistant, and will grow in poor soil. You get all these benefits along with having a naturally durable dark green lawn. You can find Bonide's DuraTurf grass seed at Knooper Nursery in Palatine, Prosek Garden Center in Winfield, Tholen's Garden Center in Bourbonnais and Kankakee, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. While you're there, download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for use on your iPhone or Droid. It's nothing like the song like this to cheer you up for the spring, right? Okay. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Dr. Wally is in the house answering garden questions. I wanted to say something. So we were talking about turf, and we got a question that poured in over the tweeter machine. But before we get to that, Wally, I started to say this earlier, and that was about lawns. Even though fall is the best time, if you're going to do it in the spring, now's the time. Right.
Yeah. If you need to get some repair going because you got damage on your turf from last year, you can certainly start now. Like I say, begin with a gentle rake up. Try to scratch up the areas that are bare. Get yourself some compost. Put that down. What I like to do is, again, a big fan of Dr. Earth. I'd like to use the Dr. Earth lawn fertilizer down first, overdress it with a little compost and topsoil mix, get your grass seed across the top of that, and just simply pat it down. You don't want to cover it with an excessive amount of soil on top. You only need to put like a quarter inch of soil on top of that grass seed.
Or you can just press the seed in.
Or press it in.
Yeah.
Take a walk across and put an old board down there.
Yeah.
Tap it in with
the old board, yeah, putting that down.
And water. And like I say, I stress watering your whole garden, when possible, in the morning if you can.
Yeah. And the other thing about overseeding is it is important for your lawn. Lawns wear out. They have patches that get destroyed. Dogs do them in. Diseases do them in. And I think a lot of people have the notion that, oh, don't worry, my lawn will spread. It'll fill in. And it won't. I mean, it might over a course of years. Not going to do it right away, but if you lawn is like any other plant. You know, if a plant dies, and this is when I do garden talks, if a plant dies, you don't just sit there and say, well, the other plants will spread and fill in. No, you get a new plant and you put it in there. Same thing with lawn. If your lawn goes south on you and dies
parts of it die. Throw some seed down. You can overseed and let it mix in. The question, though, is you want to, you know, you want to try to match the lawn you have, and that's the hardest part, you know, because you got to, there are so many different turf varieties. You actually have to carve out a little chunk and bring it in for ID, don't you, Wally? You're laughing about this.
Well, yes and no. Generally, a good blend of grass seed. What you need to know is your light exposure. Is it shade, part shade, full sun type of thing? If your lawn was sodded, it's going to be a little bit different. A good garden center is going to be able to help you out immensely as far as your selection is on there.
Yeah, and if you want ID, I mean, that's one way to do it, is to take it into a little chunk into a garden center and say, what do you think I got here? And at the very least, what they can tell you is, well, that's a fescue. That's a Kentucky bluegrass, you know. Oh, look at you got zoysia grass. Get that out of there. That's the other thing, folks. You see all these ads for zoysia grass in the various magazines? That's not for our area. You don't want to plant that. Now, buffalo grass, won't you come out tonight? Won't you come out tonight?
Won't you come out tonight?
And
dance
by the light of the moon. Oh, hot dog,
little Christmas, like an organ. Little Christmas sauce.
Mary, I know what I'm going to do with this turf tomorrow and the next day and the next year and the year after that.
Oh, George.
Buffalo grass. Oh, sorry.
We probably just lost a few likes.
You're right. Because how many? We had one. I saw we had gotten one like.
We actually gained two likes, I think, today.
Oh, come on, folks. Well, we can do better than that.
Mud Baron asked his friends. He said, I really, really like this show. So thanks so much, Mud Baron.
Thank you, Mud Baron. He's out in California, I'm pretty sure.
But I can see, like, the number of people who are seeing the posts that I'm putting on Facebook. And so if you are just a listener, you know, I'm reposting and Rob is tweeting all throughout the show to give you the links to some of those great, you know, our great guests and our sponsors. So, you know, check out the Facebook page.
All right. Tell your friends to listen. It's important because we're the most listened to, well, not this hour, actually the 9 o'clock hour. We're in the wrong hour here.
Maybe we should stop singing.
Oh, gosh. I feel like life has passed me by. All right. Well, buffalo grass is a native grass, grows deep. And you might have to mow it four times a year, maybe, you know, it depends what you want. The problem is it greens up late, goes dormant early. However, I've seen the lawn over Jack Pizzo's out in Leland, Illinois, and his next to his prairie, and it's just cool stuff. Buffalo grass, that's pretty cool. So you might want to consider native grass as well. All right. So we got that out of the way. Before I have to let you go, Wally, we had a question that came pouring in over the Twitter sphere, and that was Rob.
So Zan wants to know, she takes her large containers, like 20-inch containers, and fills the bottoms with straw and then just tops them off with 8 or 10 inches of soil. How does that sound for strategy?
That would maybe fine, but it's really not as deep as you'd like it for vegetables.
Wait, say that again. What does she do? She's got the...
She uses 20-inch containers and fills the bottoms with straw.
Oh, I see.
And then just the top 8 or 10 inches of the pot is soil.
Oh, interesting, interesting. I don't know why she puts straw on the bottom.
Well, I would question that just a little bit, of course.
I think she's probably trying to get drainage, but one of the things, if that's the case, the new deal on that, that's old school. You know, the idea that you need pebbles or something in the bottom of a pot.
Oh.
Totally old school. No, it doesn't. You don't need that. Don't do it.
Okay.
Put soil all the way in a pot if you're going to, you know, and when we say soil, we're talking soilless mix. That's a light, fluffy stuff.
Correct. Correct. Your soil, a better soil mix is a combination of macro and micro pores, and it allows the proper amount of water to go to the plant's roots and then drain off. And what's real important in a container is air, too. So that's what's important. If you're going to use too dense of a soil, that's what you run into problems with. Now, as far as straw goes, what might be happening is that straw might hold a little too much water. I mean, if you're trying to fill up the bottom of your pot and try to cut down the amount of soil you have to use, you can sometimes use bark nuggets will work well for that. Straw may hold just a little too much moisture.
Mm-hmm.
So
and you might end up drowning your plants.
Correct. And the other thing people have a tendency to do is dump gravel in the bottom because they're told, again, that because they need that for drainage.
Yeah.
Gravel sometimes has a large amount of lime on it. So if you're going to use gravel, make sure you rinse it off real good before you could put it in your container.
And that's the thing. One of the things we've learned is that there's an interface between gravel and soil. And any interface that you have slows water. It's physics, just complete physics. So don't put gravel in the bottom of your pot. It doesn't make it drain faster. It makes it drain slower. Now, if you want to put in like styrofoam or something to make the pot lighter, well, I can see where you might want to do that. But just be aware that you're still going to have that interface, and it's still going to drain slower. Yes, Wally?
Be a little bit careful with styrofoam when you're dealing, especially with edibles. You have that problem with plastics.
There you go.
Styrofoam.
And another reason.
So,
leaching.
Really?
Yeah. Styrofoam's not the thing to use if it's
flowers. I was thinking of those popcorn things, but
you have to be careful with that.
But I wouldn't do it anymore anyway. I was just saying, well, if you have to and they want to make it lighter. But the point is, you're not doing yourself any favors by putting anything in the bottom of a pot. That whole thing, that's a myth. It has been debunked. We're moving on.
Glad we had this conversation before I started my front planters.
That's right. Don't do it.
Right.
Just put soil all the way. Now, if you're worried about soil coming out of the bottom of the pot, you put a little permeable layer, basically a little bit of the toilet paper, boom, in the bottom, and that will leak out.
Coffee filter works.
Or coffee filter. Yeah, whatever. It allows, then the soil won't come dripping out. I wish I could take your call, Chris. I'm flat out of time. Dr. Wally, now from Bertholdt's. Proud sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. We've had our tip of the week, which was, that was the thermometer, right?
Correct.
And give that again. We need to put it into like 4 or 5 inches.
Put it down about 5-6 inches into the soil.
Oh, 5 or 6. I'm going to put this thing all the way down there.
Get your reading and then apply it to your gardening. It's pretty simple.
It's pretty cool. So get yourself a soil thermometer. Wally, we will be talking in the future. He's going to have more tips for us as the season goes on. It's always a pleasure to have you here, and thanks for schlepping away all the way. Do you got to go to work now?
I'm going to head back.
It never stops, does it, Wally?
Oh, that's fun.
Yes, it is. All right, and here's someplace on the south side of Chicago, and that is Alsip Home and Nursery in Frankfort, Illinois, in St. John, Indiana. They're going green. And no, I'm not just talking about their fabulous plants. I'm talking about the way they're trying to make a better planet. Now through April 30th, you can receive 1 5% off coupon each day you bring in a plastic pot or tray to recycle. And it doesn't matter where you purchase that pot. Alsip will still take it in. Now, here's the disclaimer. Nursery items can include... come on. Are you kidding me? It's Amy. It's Amy Stewart. It's my next guest. You better get her on the phone. She's wondering why we're not calling her. Let's get her lined up there, Denny.
Hey, Amy. I'll call you in a second.
There we go.
She's obviously not listening because she's calling me. She goes, how come you're not talking to me? Amy Stewart coming up next. Nursery items do not include trees, shrubs, and perennials. The offer cannot be combined with other coupons or vouchers, nor maybe multiple 5% coupons be combined. Whatever I just said. You see, here's the way it works. The green industry typically uses the lower-grade non-recyclables for nursery and greenhouse pot and tray production. But many low-grade plastics, the ones number 2, 5, and 6, are non-recyclable by standard methods. Alsip Home and Nursery, however, has partnered with a large industry plastics producer, which has developed a process to effectively recycle and reuse the lower grade materials, saving space in overcrowded landfills. And I want to give them kudos for that. So bring in your plastic pots to both locations, Frankfort, Illinois, and St. John, Indiana. Go to alsipnursery.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com.
If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Not only did I just get a call from Amy Stewart, who wanted to say, hey, where are you? But I also got a call from Ron Cowgill just a second ago, and I picked that up and go, what do you want? I'm out in the air. And he said, turn your ringer off. So your phone, your phone.
See, you know what? He seems to have known that you did not learn after the first ring. Because it rang the second time.
I'm too busy to turn my ringer off, okay?
Thanks, Ron Cowgill.
Amy Stewart, hi, how are you?
Hey, good morning, how are you?
Okay, I know you got to head out pretty soon, and it's a little less time than we thought, but, you know, that's showbiz sometimes. However, Amy has just done it again, written a book called The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World's Greatest Drinks. I don't know where you come up with these ideas, even though you explained in the book where you come up with the ideas. Amy is the author of Wicked Plants, The Weed That Killed Lincoln's Mother and Other Botanical Atrocities. She also wrote Wicked Bugs, The Louse That Conquered Napoleon's Army and Other Diabolical Insects, The Earth Moved on the Remarkable Achievement of Earthworms, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Flower Confidential. And every time you write one of these darn things, you end up on the bestseller list in the New York Times. Gosh, what a terrible life you lead.
It's not bad, you know? And now I get to come to Chicago.
I know.
So
you're going to be...
Life is good.
You're going to be here. Yeah, nah, right. You come to Chicago, can't bother to come early enough to come into the studio, can you?
No, man, no. I'm on an airplane this morning, so that was the best I could do.
All right. Well, just so you know, before we go any further... Tomorrow, April 8th at 7 p.m., she's at the bookstall, 811 Elm Street in Winnetka. Then on the 9th, she's at the Standard Club of Illinois. They're going to be hosting a reception and luncheon for Amy at 11:30 a.m. And then that evening, Tuesday evening at Anderson's Books in Naperville, they're having a drunken botanist party with an assortment of cocktail-friendly plants. Oh, my goodness. You know, I want to write a book where it's about drinking so that people will just pour liquor for me everywhere I go.
Well, you have figured out my strategy. That's totally what it's all about. And I should say, I think the Standard Club event is for members. So if you're not a member, you might want to call first and find out what the deal is. But obviously, the bookstore events are for everybody, and I hope you all will come. And we are going to be doing some drinking. So there are cocktails everywhere I go. You know, the funny thing about that is when I came out to Chicago for Flower Confidential, it was February, and it was so cold that it couldn't snow. It was too cold to snow.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, I had never heard of that.
Really? Wait a second.
Those are tough days in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? You know, when you say it's so cold, it couldn't snow, I have to do this.
Thank you. But you know, I showed up at the bookstore, and one of the growers that I'd written about in the book had sent red tulips to the store in the middle of this unbelievable freezing weather. Like, I didn't even think anyone would come because I was like, well, it's too cold outside to sustain human life. So obviously everyone's going to stay indoors or we will all die.
Uh-huh.
And yet the store was packed, and there were these red tulips everywhere, and it was amazing. But this time I'm going to show up, and they're going to be pouring drinks, so that's even better.
Oh, my goodness, yes. That's so much better than tulips.
Who needs them, right? Who needs tulips?
You know, so does this mean I need to write a book about pot?
Well, you know, that would be one way to get some if you don't know how to otherwise.
It's like, we're going to have an event in Colorado.
Right.
And in Washington State, nowhere else.
But, yeah. I know. You know, I was just at the garden show in Seattle, and people were coming up to me saying, hey, next year, could you come back and do a talk about how to grow pot? Because it's legal now, and we really need some help. And I was like, you're asking me, like, this has to be my job. This is, you know, this is what you expect from me.
Right. Aren't there experts who know that stuff already?
I mean, how would I know?
You know, exactly. You know, that's always my favorite thing when garden clubs say, hey, would you come in and tell us, you know, how to construct a float for the Rose Bowl parade using flowers? Just give us an hour on that.
Yeah. Well, don't you know everything? I thought you did. Wait, yeah. I need to rethink this game.
I know. You don't want to be here anymore, do you, Lisa? Okay, so, Amy, to your book.
Yes.
The whole point of it is that we grow all these plants in the world, and we have found ways to make alcohol out of just about every single one of them, haven't we?
Exactly, right. If it's a plant and if it makes starch or sugar, we have turned it into booze at some point in time.
So you go through the list of different things that we have taken and made spirits out of, including herbs, spices, flowers, trees, fruits and nuts, all kinds of plants. Somebody, I had I think it was a tweet this morning. Somebody was going, agave, woohoo! And when they saw that. Now, why were they doing that?
Well, you know, agave is used to make not just tequila, but also mezcal and a whole bunch of other agave-based spirits, and also pulque, which is sort of like beer, but made from agave sap. So in some ways, that's kind of everybody's favorite booze plant, right? If you're a tequila drinker, that's the one.
Mm-hmm. So in your research, obviously, you came across plants and booze that you had not had before. What was the most surprising?
Well, here's a really weird one. The fruit of the cashew tree. So most of us, you know, we know what the nut looks like, right? But if you've never seen it, the cashew tree produces a fruit that's kind of shaped like an apple, which is why they call it the cashew apple. And then below that hangs the shell with the nut inside of it. So it's a very weird shape.
And now, wait a second. Let's stop you there for a second. Isn't the cashew, like, extremely toxic? Didn't you write about this in one of your other books?
That's right. It's related to poison ivy and poison oak. So you can't touch it without getting a rash.
Except we eat the nut. And this is where people get in trouble sometimes, because sometimes the shell will get into cashews and contaminate them. Am I wrong in that?
Well, you know, for the most part, when you buy cashews, they've been very carefully steamed open and processed, so that won't happen. But, you know, there have been isolated cases around the world where the shells are still included, and you can get a rash from that, definitely.
Yeah, I don't want to bring the cashew industry crashing down, okay, by my saying that, of course. I'm just
Right, yeah, no. But anyway, the fruit itself is also safe to handle. And so in the Indian state of Goa, which is this tiny little very tropical, lush, very popular destination for European tourists, they crush the cashew apple and make a high-proof spirit out of it called fenny. And I actually got to taste cashew apple fenny as I was working on this book. And, you know, I don't know that it's really going to catch on here in the U.S. anytime soon.
Uh-huh.
But it's really an interesting flavor. And if you are ever on vacation in Goa, then cashew apple fenny is what you will be drinking.
What about your strange brews? You talk about strange brews as well in the book.
Right. Well, so in addition to just the most popular things that we turn into alcohol, like, you know, I have a chapter on sugarcane and grapes and barley and corn, all the things that we really think about, there are all these other really bizarre plants that other people have turned into alcohol. So, for instance, the monkey puzzle tree, which is this weird conifer, goes back 180 million years.
Oh, I got to tell you, it's one of my favorite trees on the planet. If you've never seen a monkey puzzle tree, and in the Pacific Northwest, they have them. They grow them out in the Pacific Northwest, and people plant them as specimens. It's not like it shows up in the rainforest out there by its own. But I've seen them, you know, 40, 50, 80 feet high, and they're just stunning.
They're really interesting-looking plants, and they're dioecious, meaning that there's either male or female. And the females, if they're pollinated, produce these big old cones, because they're conifers, right? So they have kind of like pine cones with seeds in them. And in Chile, where they're native, native people make a sort of beer-like drink out of these nuts. And what they do is they chew on the nuts, and the enzymes in the saliva help break down the sugars and start the fermentation process, and then they spit them into this shared communal tub, and that's where they ferment, and people drink that. It's called Mudai. We will not be drinking that at my bookstore events this week, by the way, in case you were hoping to come out and taste some of that. But anyway, it is so I think that Mudai is probably the drink made from the oldest plant on the planet, being 180 million years old. And also, Chile has named the monkey puzzle tree a national monument. So it's probably the only drink in the world made from a national monument, too.
Awesome. That's great.
Yeah, very cool.
Now, you mentioned cocktails as well. So I got to tell you, a bit of advice you have in the book that I was not aware of.
Yeah.
And you say ice is good. And even when it melts, it's good. I always thought it dilutes a drink. You say no.
No, the opposite. What happens is that a lot of the really flavorful molecules in a drink, and whether we're talking about whiskey or a mixed drink or anything, those really flavorful molecules, when you add water, they sort of break out of suspension and clump together, meaning that it's easier for you to taste them. So a little bit of ice or a little bit of water or a little extra time in the cocktail shaker actually helps the flavor. I mean, I've gone to distilleries, as part of doing this book, sometimes my job is to swing by a distillery and pick up a big batch of cocktails they've made for us to pour that night. And they're always very careful to tell me, we've already added some water, so you don't need to worry about that. I mean, you can put it over a little ice, but you're good as far as the water being in there. So that's actually, whether it's one ice cube or just a little splash of water, that's actually a good thing.
And I look at some of the cocktail recipes you have. These are great names. The French Intervention, the Vavilov Affair, Prickly Pear Sangria, Bison Grass Cocktail, Moscow Mule. Dombey's last word, was it after having the drink?
Yeah, well, no, Dombey. So yeah, some of these drinks are classic cocktails, like Moscow Mule's been around since, the 40s or 50s. But Dombey's last word, so there's actually a cocktail called the last word, but this is a variation on that using a lemon verbena liqueur instead of the chartreuse. And Joseph Dombey is the guy who brought lemon verbena to Europe. But yes, he perished. He died in prison, actually, while he was out botanizing. A lot of these botanists died terrible, horrible deaths.
Hey, just like the people who have the poison plants and the insects. I mean, there's always tragedy in the books you write.
I know. Amy. It can happen. Anytime somebody has died an awful, tragic death while off trying to get some plants, I can't help but want to tell their story.
Well, here's the deal, Amy. I got to run. I know you got to catch a plane. I want to continue this conversation, okay? I know you're going to tour Chicago. The book's going to be out for a while. People are going to want to have it, and I want to get into some of these recipes even further. So I just let people know that the book is called The Drunken Botanist, The Plants That Create the World's Great Drinks. You can go to my website and click on the link, or you can go to amystewart.com. It's all there. She's in Chicago in the next couple of days, like I said, at the bookstall in Winnetka on Monday, and Anderson's book books in Naperville on Tuesday. And enjoy your drinks, and you and I will talk again real soon.
Yeah, let's do that soon, Mike. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Mulching is one of the best things you can do for your trees, and it's easy, inexpensive, and doesn't require special tools. Mulch suppresses weeds and keeps equipment like lawnmowers and string trimmers away from the tree, and thus reduces trunk injuries that can be an opening for disease and insect damage. We call that lawnmower blight sometimes. Mulching also moderates soil temperatures and conserves moisture in the soil to help trees through dry spells. It increases the amount of organic material and activity around the roots that feed the tree. And the most commonly used mulching material is wood chips. I love wood chips. Spread them around the base of the tree, but don't create a volcano. And invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure. You're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life.
Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Dr. Earth Seaweed Concentrate, I told you I was going to mention that, is a powerful liquid fertilizer formulated to work fast any time of the year, regardless of temperature. Nutrients are released quickly, yet continue to feed for several weeks. This ultra-premium concentrated formula is rich in kelp meal and humic acids to provide optimum levels of potassium and naturally occurring multi-minerals. And it's easy to use. Just mix with water and apply to the soil or foliage. Go to DrEarth.com to find an independent dealer near you. Connect with them on Facebook and Twitter for organic updates. And Dr. Wall, you still have, you said use the liquid seaweed for what? What did you have that for?
I like to do a seedbed preparation.
Oh, right.
It.
The seedbed preparation. And it'll help your seeds germinate. How cool is that? All right. All right, Lisa Albrecht, Rob Carthol, Denny Sheeter, thank you so much.
As always, quick show.
Oh, my gosh. Always hey, trying to cram too much stuff. Yes.
I am going to post a few more. There's yet another oil spill.
And there's stuff on my website about oil spills and about starved rock.
Lots going on environmentally, so check out the Facebook page for all that.
Go green or
go home.